We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the program today, we'll be talking about some things that parents can do to promote good relations between their children. Now, for a lot of parents, dealing with conflict between their kids, that can be a big challenge. But more than that, I think what a lot of parents want is children that will end up supporting each other and having good relationships with each other throughout their lives. Our guest for the program in this hour is Lori Kramer. She is Associate Dean of Academic Programs in the College of ACES at U of I and a professor of Applied Family Studies. And for a long time now, she's been doing research trying to look at what it is that makes for good sibling relationships, and then looking at things that parents can do to respond to sibling conflict and build better relations between their kids. She now is offering and evaluating a preventive intervention program called More Fun with Sisters and Brothers that she developed that teaches 4 to 8-year-old siblings social skills for establishing good positive interactions. We can talk about that and some of the research that she has done over time. And we'll try to have some suggestions on things that parents can do to build good relations between their children. As people who are listening are welcome to join in the conversation. Maybe you have a specific question, or maybe you'd like to talk about your own family, maybe your experiences growing up with your brothers and sisters and how things worked out, or maybe some of the challenges as a parent that you have faced with your own kids. So you can tell a story, you can ask a question, any and all of that certainly welcome. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like, you can send an email and send us your thoughts that way. Write to will-talk, I'm going to put that dash in there, willtalk@illinois.edu. And at any point here, folks are certainly welcome to call. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, David.
I was in looking at your background, I was really struck by the fact that this particular set of issues, you've been working on this and writing about this and doing research on this for a long time. That you, in fact, have a group of families that you have been following now since the early 1980s as they had kids and their kids grew up all the way to the point where they're probably out of the house now, their first children.
Yes, yes. I started my first study on this topic, I think, in about 1983. And did my dissertation research here at the University of Illinois and worked with 30 families in the area, each of whom had a preschool-aged child and whose mom was expecting a second child. So I started working with these families before that second child was even born, the last trimester of pregnancy. And I've been following these families every so often, very regularly when the new child was born, kind of showing up at these families' homes about every 2 weeks, I'd say, for the first 9 months, and then coming back at select intervals over the last, 20-plus years. So it's been very, very interesting. The last time that I visited these families was when the older child, remember, I started when this child was a preschooler, when this older child was about 16, 17, 18 years of age, ready to leave the family, and that second-born child was getting ready for high school. So really looking at the entire time that these siblings were growing up together in the same household. It's been a lot of fun watching these families grow up, and I've kept in contact with many of them. And some of them, some of these, you know, original preschoolers are now married and have their own children. So I've got to think about what to do next with them.
Well, you know, it's striking, or it seems to me that given that sibling conflict can be a real problem, and given that relations between siblings, how they learn to relate to one another, that has a lot to do with how it is they end up relating to other people through the rest of their lives.
Yes.
Given those two things, it seems surprising that these issues actually haven't gotten more attention from researchers than they have.
Yeah, Yeah. You know, I think that's so important. We tend to focus, especially parents tend to focus on some of the obvious things. You know, we talk about our kids getting along well or not because, oh, they're, you know, 2 years apart as opposed to 4 years apart, or because they're both girls or both boys or whatever. And what we have learned from the research is that those things can matter, but they're really not things that tend to be terribly important in the big scheme of things. They only account for a very small proportion of the answer when we're looking for what are the factors that help brothers and sisters get along with one another. There are other things that tend to be much more important, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it may really have something to do with the relationships that children have with other people that may be a very important factor in how they get along with their siblings.
Yeah. Although I'm sure that is true, and as you point out in some of your writing, that the first people we really have to deal with, and the first people we have to deal with are our parents.
Right.
But then past that, then the first people that we're dealing with every day who are really in each other's faces, they're going to be our siblings.
Right, right. And even before that, if you're a first child in a family before your sibling's born, you actually have a lot of social contacts with other people nowadays. Kids go to daycare, they go to preschool, they have childcare providers, they have cousins, aunts and uncles. And it turns out that a lot of their relationships with these other people tend to matter and set the stage for what that developing relationship is going to look like with their own siblings. One of the first studies that I did on this topic actually illustrated that it's children's relationships with their best friends before they become siblings that tend to be the better predictors of how well they're going to get along with their siblings over time.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
Well, that gets to the matter of how important in terms of a person's socialization. You know, we think that parents are the big thing.
And they are, no doubt
about it. But peers are also
huge.
Extremely important. It's hugely important.
Huge. Yeah, I mean, think about it. If you are a four-year-old child and you have interactions with your parents, we kind of know what that looks like. Parents work really hard to try to understand what their children need, what they want, what they're interested in. And a lot of parents do a lot of things every day to make that relationship work, you know. But when kids are interacting with another four-year-old, the same things don't happen. That other four-year-old isn't predisposed to try to understand what the other one is thinking or feeling or needing. They're not able to help verbalize what their desires, wants are. So it really turns out that there may be some special social and emotional competencies that help kids develop a good relationship with another child early in life. That may be very important, that may prepare them very well for interacting with a younger sibling who really isn't predisposed to come into this world and try to, you know, help make good things happen in that relationship.
Well, I suppose that suggests that on one level, you have a couple, they have one child. They're thinking they're probably going to have more than one. And they're also thinking, well, they want their children to be able to get along well together. That in fact, maybe one of the things you want to think about is doing what you can to make sure that your first child has interactions with other children, with other kids.
That go well.
Well, yes, they go well.
Because I think parents play a huge role in coaching and socializing these social interactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a three-year-old or a four-year-old and you have a play date, you know, those kids are probably too young to just be left entirely on their own. Parents are going to be important for structuring the relationship, maybe helping to identify what sorts of things the kids can do together, maybe to be there doing some coaching to help them, you know, deal with any conflicts or issues that come up, to help them verbalize to each other. You know, you don't really leave three-year-olds on their own. We do, I guess, a little bit, but we've got to be there to supervise. And a part of that, the work of parents, is to help socialize relationship skills.
Yeah. Well, again, I guess then that goes to the idea that maybe parents are thinking, well, if I only have one child, conflict management, well, I have to manage my relationship with the child. But conflict management in terms of the kids is something that, well, maybe we'll think about that when we have more children. But that says, no. Right. You actually have to be thinking about that right from the get-go in terms of how it is that your child is going to relate to other children.
That's right. And that's what teachers do, what child care educators do. They're really helping young children to negotiate this very challenging social world. And they're very young, but it's very important.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus, Lori Kramer. She's professor of applied family studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And in her research for quite a long time now, she's been looking at what it is that makes for good sibling relationships, trying also to develop some practical kind of information that she can give to parents so that they can try to encourage good relationships between their children, that is, between their own children, but also part of the thing, as she has explained, is relations between your kids and other people's kids. And that's very important, too. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-WILL or 9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, you said a little bit earlier that as people think about what it is that shapes and influences relationships within a family between children, that people in the past have thought, well, you know, their relative ages, that's probably important. Their genders, that's probably important. You know, things like birth order seems to have something to do with personality and how kids are going to interact. And you said, well, sure, yeah, all that really matters. Mm-hmm. But that those might not be the most important things. And there may be other things. So if the things that come to mind first aren't as important, well, what really does matter?
Right. So I have followed families, those 30 families over time, to try to look at, you know, what are some of the things that kids do in their relationships with other children, with their parents? What seems to be the best predictors of good sibling relationships? And we found that there actually are a few things that are very strong predictors. One is, you know, how interested children are in interacting with another child. So, you know, one thing we can do is help kids develop an interest and ask each other to play, invite them to play, and what to do, you know, when one child doesn't want to play with the other. That's a very common occurrence, and it could easily lead to conflict or some bad feelings. So that type of engagement seems to be very important. In our world today, a lot of times kids have separate bedrooms. They've got different activities after school. They've got, you know, maybe even separate lives. Sometimes young siblings don't even realize that their parents want them to do things together and to develop some shared interests. Sounds silly, but it's a very elementary thing that I think is very easy for parents to intervene and do some positive things with, you know. And one point I want to go back to is the idea that we really don't have a lot of control over some of those factors that parents may have traditionally thought was important. The age spacing, the gender, birth order, you know, those are decisions that get made. If we're lucky, we get to make some of those. A lot of it is just by chance. But what we do to help our kids get along, we have countless opportunities every day to do something about that. So that's why I'm so excited about being able to discover some of these social and emotional competencies that we can actually shape and promote.
Yeah.
Does
it, I was just going to say, is it you might think that it would be easier to make those opportunities for kids to be involved with each other. You might think, well, that would be easier if they were closer together in age. Mm-hmm. That would mean that developmentally speaking, they would be closer to being in the same place than it would be, you know, once you get to the point they're maybe 2, 3, 4 years apart, their worlds are going to be very different. And I'm sure that it gets more difficult, particularly for the older ones, to feel that they want to be involved with the younger ones just because they're older and they got stuff to do and, you know, they're busy. They're way out ahead.
Right. That's absolutely true. And I think that we see all sorts of variations in this. You know, you can have kids 4 years apart that love to do things together and some kids that just feel that, no, they're just totally, you know, on a different plane, you know. My younger sibling is holding me back, you know, if I have to spend too much time with them. They're an annoyance, a nuisance. So you see all different flavors of this going on. But I think what parents can do is maybe help to identify one activity that they would like to promote as a shared activity. It may need to be something that neither sibling is, you know, really so invested in themselves. You know, if the older child really sees themselves as a great tennis player, for example, you may not want to get the whole family engaged in tennis. Maybe you want to find something else that everybody can, you know, be a part of. Maybe it's working on puzzles together or learning chess or something. But I think parents can find some activity that they may want to really have as one thing that we all do together.
Is it more natural that children should feel the drive to compete, or is it more natural that they should feel, well, they are siblings and they have this very important bond,
right?
Or is it sort of some of each?
Well, they're both correct. Both happen at the same time. And that's why we tend to call sibling relationships ambivalent relationships, because they truly seem to be mixtures of very positive things and very negative things. Positive and negative things that may happen in sequence, close in time. You know, one minute kids are getting along great, and then you don't even know what happened, but all of a sudden everything switched and there's huge conflict. So you could see this fluctuation in their behavior over time, but you can also see blends of positive and negative at the same time, feeling really good about a sibling, you know, the fact that you know that they'll stick up for you on the playground, but at the same moment really feeling resentful about something else that they did. Maybe you feel that, you know, they're a dad gave them some preferential treatment in some respect. So these are so interesting, you know, that we have these relationships that are just pure mixtures of the positive and negative.
That's, you know, I'm sure that parents forever, if they have more than one, say, well, just for easy example, they have two. Parents, I'm sure, forever have been saying to the older child, look out for your little brother or sister. You're bigger.
Right.
And, you know, one wonders, well, what putting that responsibility on your child, I mean, is that it seems like a natural thing to do, but you wonder, now, is that really too much, particularly depending on how old they are?
Yeah, I think you want to be very careful in your language about those things and the expectations that you convey, because young children just may not be capable of that. If you follow that up with, you know, if you see your younger sibling getting into trouble in the playground, the classroom, not being able to do their locker, if it's not something that you can help them with, go get somebody who can. You know, that could be the best way to help them out. I think many siblings naturally feel some degree of, you know, wanting to be protective of their siblings and wanting to defend them. You know, it's almost like, you know, you don't really appreciate it when other people criticize or put down your sibling. You may want to do that yourself. You may feel that you deserve the exclusive right to be able to do that, but it's not okay for others to do that. You know, so I think that's fairly interesting. We don't necessarily feel the same way about other people in our lives the way that we do with a sibling.
We have a call here. Let's bring them into the conversation. This is someone who's listening in Champaign, and they're on line number one. Hello.
Hi. Yes, thanks for taking my call. Sure. You know, I think I might be shifting the conversation a little bit here, the focus of it.
That's fine. And
that would be about to hear more about the research experiences that Lori has encountered in working with families, maybe specifically children, regarding kind of her methods, just generally how she went about collecting data and maybe some of the challenges or the insights that she gained from such an extensive study in terms of the process that she went through.
Okay. Well, that's a great question, and I'll try not to make this very, very technical, because I believe research can be a lot of fun, especially for the participants. You know, in that first study where I followed the 30 families, I would show up in their home every other week and did a variety of things that I think are kind of unique for research. You know, I did the normal interviews with parents. That was wonderful. Got a great set of perspectives from families. But I really like to observe what kids do in their relationships with people. And so I brought in video cameras. We videotaped interactions between the siblings as they were growing up, basically letting them do whatever they wanted to do within a particular space in their home. I always had a camera person there who was a research assistant ready to intervene if any child was placed in a precarious situation, which, you know, from time to time, there were some things I call near misses that were kind of interesting to observe, you know, like someone decides to take off a shoe and somehow it lands, you know, two feet away from a baby, you know, those sorts of things. To look at the quality of children's relationships with their friends, I also did an observational technique where we let these preschool children play alone in a room in their house with their friend and just left a tape recorder going. And this way, we're really able to get some incredible snapshots of the quality of interaction between these kids that we later analyzed. We created verbatim transcripts of them, and then we coded them to try to look at the types of interpersonal processes that these kids were engaging in with their friends and use that information to try to predict how well they were going to get along with their siblings at all of the different observation points that I looked at, ending when the older child was 18 years of age. And that was fascinating because we found that it was the overall quality, the degree to which these young children were positive in their interactions with their friends, that was a strong predictor of how positive they were going to be with their brothers and sisters at all of the different time points that I measured. And what was even fascinating about this was that that was a stronger predictor of sibling relationship quality than these children's interactions with their mothers or their fathers, or even the quality of their parents' marital relationship. So they really cued me in that there was something about the social and emotional competencies that kids demonstrate in their early relationships with friends that are important. And so that was one of the major ingredients that went into the development of my program, More Fun with Sisters and Brothers. We used the skills that we identified through that research and through other studies, and are teaching those sorts of things. So we're using the information to teach. I've talked a little bit about, letting kids know we want them to engage with their siblings in a positive way. Perspective taking was also very, very important. So learning that your sibling may have a perspective or a set of interests that may be different than your own, and that it's just as valid as your own needs, thoughts, feelings, opinions, is a very important social and emotional competency. I know a lot of adults who could use some instruction with this, but we found that we're actually able to teach children as young as 4 some of those basic skills. Another important area that we've identified is being able to manage all the different types of emotions that happen in children's sibling relationships. So we know that these relationships can be very frustrating for young kids. You know, your sibling looks at you the wrong way in the back of the car, or takes too much of your space or something like that. And, you wouldn't think that you'd see the volume of reaction, the intensity of a reaction that we often see. And that's because young children don't necessarily have a great deal of skill in being able to manage those emotions that are troubling or disturbing to them. So we have found ways to help children expand their vocabulary about emotions, you know, so that they can talk and express themselves in a better way, more precise way. You know, so instead of saying, you know, to a sibling, "I hate you," we help kids to understand, well, maybe they're frustrated, maybe they're disappointed. Maybe there's some, you know, lower key emotion that we can kind of help them use to label that experience as that is likely to lead to a more productive outcome. And then we teach children some skills for being able to manage those feelings when they are actually facing them in a sibling experience. So we teach kids, we use the words, ways to chill is how we call it. So we teach kids about 10 different ways that they can calm themselves down and think more productive thoughts in those encounters. And then finally, we've learned that being able to manage conflicts is a very important skill, and we found ways to break this down so that we can teach children as young as age 4 some basic skills in how to manage conflict. So the research paradigm has kind of morphed into the development of this program and now the testing of this program. And we've done 3 studies on this over the last 10 years, I'd say, and a previous study that focused on even younger children, preschoolers who had an infant or toddler age sibling, and have learned that it truly seems to help develop more positive sibling interactions when we go into the home and videotape siblings interacting together freely, or as freely as possible when there's a camera there. They kind of forget about the camera very, very quickly. So we see that there are gains that children experience, and that we're able to tie this back to the social competencies that we're teaching in the program and can trace the effectiveness of, you know, working on things like emotion regulation and perspective taking. Ultimately, we'll look at the effects of conflict management as well.
And is this something that's in some kind of form that parents can have so they can try it out?
Well, here's where I am in this research program. So we've been offering it through the Family Resiliency Center in the Department of Human and Community Development on campus. We don't have any sessions right now, but we hopefully will again in the future. I've been developing a curriculum based on this that I hope to be disseminating really nationwide. And we'll be working with some groups around the country so that we can train mental health professionals, educators, early childhood educators, even health professionals to be able to implement this to small groups of siblings.
Okay. Our guest this morning in this hour of focus is Lori Kramer. She is professor of applied family studies at the University of Illinois. She's also the associate dean of academic programs within the College of ACES here at U of I, Urbana-Champaign. And for some time now in her research, she's been looking at what it is that makes for good sibling relationships, and then has also been thinking about things that parents can do to try to promote good relations between their children. And as she explained, she has been now working on this this program that she calls More Fun with Sisters and Brothers. That's aimed at helping to teach kids between 4 and 8 good social skills that will then contribute to positive interactions not with their peers, certainly, but also with their siblings. And we are talking this morning about things that parents can do to foster good sibling relationships. So questions are welcome. Maybe you have some story from your own family you would want to contribute, or you have a specific question. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You may also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You know, I think that there is this phrase that we use sometimes. We talk about sibling rivalry, and that I'm sure that works on a couple of levels. One simply is maybe a natural competition between the siblings. But when you ask this question, well, in what way are they competing? I'm sure that we have this idea that a lot of conflict has to do with siblings competing for parental attention. Mm-hmm. That maybe we have this idea that if there's trouble, that what one thing they're actually looking for is they're looking for attention from their parents. What can you say about that, and particularly about the question of if children have this idea that somebody is getting favored, mm-hmm. you know, it's the old mom always liked you best,
right,
kind of syndrome. If they think that, is that a problem?
Very, very interesting. And that question launched us on a series of studies where we worked with adolescents and asked them very directly about things like what is it that concerns you? You know, when parents treat you differently, and we gave them maybe, 15 different types of areas in which parents often treat different children in the family differently, we learned something extremely important, and that is children expect their parents to treat them and their siblings differently.
They expect
they do.
Them to treat
them differently. Well, unless you're twins or triplets. Siblings differ in age. They often differ in gender. they differ in their personalities, in their interests, in their goals, who they are as people. And it's very important to children, especially adolescents, that their parents recognize that. And when they believe that their parent is treating them and their siblings differently for a good reason, they have no problem with that. And we see that in those cases, even when there's larger amounts of differential treatment that is reported, we see no correlation, no effects with their relationship between themselves and their siblings, or the relationship between them and their parents, or even their sense of well-being. It's only when children or adolescents feel that their parents are treating them differently from their siblings for not a justifiable reason that we see difficulties. Okay, so you think about this. This makes sense. If you are 12 and your sibling's 8 and you get sent to bed at the same time because parents think they need to treat you equally, that totally gives a sense to that that older child in particular that their individuality, their maturity, their advanced skills is not being appreciated by their parents. That's what leads to problems. I have a colleague who told me he had 4 brothers and sisters growing up. Their mother felt that it was incredibly important to treat the siblings the same. And so at every Christmas, every sibling in that family would get the same sweater. Didn't matter what their favorite color was, their son, you know, it didn't, their preferences were not being appreciated. And it's those sorts of differences that do seem problematic and can lead to some relationship difficulties for these children with their siblings, with their parents, and also in terms of not thinking as favorably about themselves or not reporting better well-being.
Yeah, okay. We have a couple of callers here. Let's do that and talk with someone in Champaign. This is line 1. Hello.
It's me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good morning. It's a very interesting program. I just want to share my own experience with my 2 kids. I have a boy that was my first one and a girl who, when my son born, he was very spoiled, the first grandchild in both families. So when my daughter come over, what I did is after I get out of the hospital, we stop in a store. I told my husband, get me some candy, my son's favorite candy. I will give his little sister to give her brother. So we went home, and I told my son, look, this is your baby sister, and she brought you this candy. So he was very happy, and I didn't have any jealousy about that. They grew up very close, and I was amazed that even when they were in 6th grade, 7th grade, they still close. I mean, a good brother and sister, because each one has their own circle. My daughter is very independent. My son is not as much, and my daughter start almost speaking before her brother, even if he's younger, because my son was very spoiled. So he just say, and we give him whatever he wants. So he be forced to speak faster and do many things. Now they are all both grew up. They both went to the same school. Nobody pushed them. They both want to be designers. They both are industrial designers. And until now, everything was great until he got married. Then he got married, then my daughter is jealous, and he doesn't appreciate what his sister does. But before that, I mean, the relation was great all the time. He always defends his sister is something he sees so wrong, and she always defends his brother, her brother, you know. Even they went to party together when they were teenagers. And my son always was looking for his sister that nobody was trying to be little farther away. And same thing with my daughter. So we didn't have problems until he got married. Mm-hmm. That was 4 years ago. So that's all my comment.
Mm. Well, thank you for the story. It sounds like things went really well there for a long time. And maybe when people become adults, you're moving into a different realm. But I'm sure that you would say that still relationships between siblings when they're adults, they reflect what the relationship was when they were children. I don't know if there is anything anything more than that you'd want to say about this particular story.
No, I think that's true. We do see a lot of continuity in the quality of sibling relationships over time. Now, we haven't done a lot of studies looking at this longitudinally into adulthood, but the evidence does seem to be there that if they start out with a pretty good base, it is likely to continue over time. Now, that doesn't mean that you couldn't have some of life events like someone getting married or something else happening that might lead that relationship to change in its quality. But I bet over time it will probably go back to what it looked like. I love the part of the story where you had the baby present a present to the older sibling. I think that's a very strong message, not that you have to give a present, but it's a very strong message that you are really seeing this relationship between the two children as very important early on, that it should be positive. And I don't know that we always see that in families. I think a lot of times parents are very worried that their kids are not going to get along well, or that the baby, you know, that the older child's life is going to be really disrupted by this new baby. And they try to, maybe warn the child about, you know, some negative things that may happen. I don't know that always is the best strategy. I think really research is showing talking about the new baby coming as a person that they are going to love, a person who's going to have their own set of needs, thoughts, feelings, experiences that are unique but also very important, someone who's going to come into this world to love you, which usually is the case, I think the research is showing that those are some of the most important things that parents can be doing to prepare their children for becoming a sibling.
I want to thank the caller very much for the story and go on to another. Gibson City, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, hi.
Thank you. It was a very interesting conversation. I have a question about if you look at pets in this mix. We have two boys, and they're now 17 and 20, and have gotten along very well through the years, and people comment on that. And they grew up in a house full of pets, and we had pets before we had kids. And when they came into the family, they had to learn to get along with their furry siblings. And when I hear you talk about it's the, you know, maybe a greater importance of how children interact with their friends, I wonder if that interaction with their pets early on set them up for an easier time with each other. And just wonder if that's been part of your research, if that was part of any of the families you studied, or if you have any comments on that. Thank you.
I think that's a wonderful question. I did ask families if they had pets, but we really didn't analyze that. I'll have to go back and see if there's anything to that. But I think what you're pointing out is very important, that young children who have some experiences where they really need to be aware and work towards the betterment of someone else, in this case a furry member of the family, that is important, and I think that really sets the stage for the ability to understand others. So it's an important step for their social and emotional development. Great topic. I think that's certainly worthy of some research.
Well, I thank the caller again, and go to another caller, and this is someone back in Champaign. Once again, line number 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'd like to ask the professor if you have children, what worked for you best in terms of relations between siblings?
That's a great question. One thing that I learned when I became a parent, after I had been probably teaching human development and family studies courses probably for about 5 or 6 years, is that after I had my own experiences, I really had to go back and rewrite all my lectures. There's a lot of what we think we want to do, what we operate on instinctually. And a lot of what we do as parents is probably based a lot on what we experienced as growing up in families and what we observed our parents to do and how we appraise that both positively and negatively. I have not had the experience of raising two children. I ended up with one child. There's lots of reasons people end up with the number of siblings, children that they end up having. But this question led me to do a study of whether there were some intergenerational patterns in the quality of siblings. So do parents who had a good sibling relationship end up having children who also have a good sibling relationship? Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing an interview study with mothers who had children in, I believe, the 4 to 6 year old range and did some observations of the quality of their children's relationship. So, you know, we had to rely on parents' memories of their and interpretations and perceptions of their earlier relationships with their siblings. What I found was pretty fascinating. It was mothers who had the poorest relationships growing up with their siblings, who had children who got along the best. And I was surprised by that. But then when you really start to unpack it and look at what some of the differences were in these families where mothers reported getting along well with their siblings and those that did not, it was pretty clear that the mothers who had a less positive relationship with their sibling growing up had some ideas about why that was. And a lot of it stemmed from their experiences or observations of what their parents did. So a lot of these mothers reported that their mothers engaged in some differential treatment that they thought was unwarranted. Mm-hmm. They did not use very effective methods for helping kids manage conflict, things like that. And that these mothers were working very hard to do things differently with their own children. They were trying to correct those mistakes, and they were successful. For the mothers who had a good relationship growing up, they kind of assumed that their kids would also. And so they didn't really make any explicit attempts to work to foster a better relationship between their children. And so not surprisingly, those kids did not have quite as positive a relationship as the families where moms were working hard to make that happen. I'll mention briefly, we also looked at fathers in that study, and there was no difference. So I don't know if fathers were just sort of not thinking about these issues or it didn't matter, it was random, but it was a mother's experience that seemed to be very important.
Well, this goes to another point that children, they're always watching.
Yeah.
They're always watching and they're taking notes. I'm being metaphorical, but they're always watching. So they're learning about how it is to you relate to other people. They're learning because they're watching how their parents interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And then if there are multiple children in the family, they're watching how their parents react with their brothers and sisters. And they're definitely taking note. So that's going to, among other things, what that's going to do is they're going to watch how mom is with their brother. And that's going to have some effect on how they relate to their brother. So, you know, not only do you have to be thinking about your children and how they relate to one another, but you also have to be thinking about how you as a parent relate to each one of them, because that's going to influence, you know, how you relate to them as individuals is going to influence how they relate as individuals.
That's right. They may not be taking notes, but they're keeping score.
They're paying attention. They're definitely paying attention. Let's go to another caller here, Urbana. I think line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering if you might address the special situation of twins. I was a twin, and then we had a brother that was a year younger than us, and another brother a year younger than us. And my parents, my sister was tall and dark hair and dark brown eyes, and I wasn't, and they would dress us in the same clothes. I abhorred it, because what looked good on her looked awful on me. What looked good on me looked awful on her. So do you have any feedback on that?
Well, sure. Twins are a very special relationship because you're born at the same time. I think there's not a lot of research on the social relationships between twins. So we have to kind of extrapolate from other research. A lot of work done on twins looking at, you know, what's genetic and what's environmental. But, you know, twins, fraternal twins in particular, are really just genetically related to the same degree that regular biological siblings are. So it's not surprising that siblings are different individuals, even when they are twins. They work very hard to create their own identity. They certainly come into the world with their own sense of preferences and of, you know, and I think that leads them to develop their own sense of identity and opinions as they grow up. And I think it's very important for children, twins included, to feel that their parents recognize them as individuals. So, yes, they look carefully at how their parents treat them. They want that treatment to match who they are or who they think they are as individuals. And as David pointed out, at the same time, they're watching very carefully to see whether the whether parents are treating their sibling in the same way, overdoing it, you know, dressing twins the same when the twins don't want to be dressed the same feels like a violation of that sense of individuality. And I think that can be challenging. Of course, parents are doing this out of their own sense of best interests.
I was wondering also, I know it's not exactly sibling relationships, but in the past, kids used to be able to play outdoors, have free time to pursue their own interests, you know, have relationships with other kids in the neighborhood. I heard someone refer to it as free-range children, which I find very amusing. But that seems to be very lacking anymore. Kids are scheduled into activities at the park district and after-school programs and, you know, daycare. And it seems to me like there's a real need for children to have more free playtime. How do you think about that?
I think that free play, unstructured in that sense, in a safe environment where there is some adult supervision, can be very useful. I mean, you really want to help children have some times where they can be imaginative, where they can interact with children of different ages, which a lot of the school programs and after-school programs may not nourish quite so much. There's no reason why your whole social world has to be with, you know, fifth graders because you're a fifth grader. So I definitely agree that we want to give kids license to explore and just to experience different types of social interactions with people. I agree that can add a lot to a child's development. Parents are worried about safety issues in ways that they weren't before. And there's also a press to make sure that every valuable minute is spent wisely. And then we're, you know, competing with a lot of screen time and video and all that technology parts of it, too. So, you know, I think we want to be very intentional about the environments we place our children in, but that doesn't mean that it always has to be structured.
I want to thank the caller. We just have a couple of minutes left. I'm sure that people in the child development field would say that in shaping behavior, it's going to be generally better to reinforce the behaviors that you want rather than to sanction the ones that you don't. So if the goal here is to reinforce and reward positive social interaction between siblings, you want to do that. What's a good way to do that?
I think you want to show that you value the positive interactions that siblings have. So it's not like you want to walk over with the M&Ms and say, your kids have been nice to each other all day. I'm really happy. That kind of artificialness could actually backfire and kids feel like they, you know, when they get along, it's for mom. You want them to experience the fun that they have, which is why I call the program Fun with Sisters and Brothers. Mm. And what we teach kids is that, you know, if everybody is having fun, you're probably using these skills well. When one person's not having fun, well, we may need to look at what's going on to understand that. But you want kids to develop that intrinsic sense that interacting with my brother, playing with my brother or sister is fun. And if you can do that, I think that's really going to help preserve that relationship over time. They're going to be more willing to support each other in times of stress and to come forward in adulthood when you really want them to be sources of support when parents can't be there to step in.
And that's really, as I said at the beginning, that's, I guess, really your long-term goal. Yes, you want people, you want peace in the valley, as my brother-in-law would say. The issue is, yeah, you want them to get along now, but you hope that they're going to have a good, solid, strong, lifelong relationship past the point where you're going to be around and have anything to say about it anymore.
That's right. Having an older sister in adulthood that you get along with, that you have some connections, is really related to good health. But just having contact with that sibling later in life is very, very predictive of better outcomes.
Well, so we have about a minute here. Yeah. A last thought that you might want to leave with folks?
Well, I think, you know, what I tell parents is think what you want your children's relationship to look like. And if you really think about it, that will help you set some goals and help you chart a path that, that should help them have more times where they're having fun with each other. We don't expect them always to be their siblings, and it's a safe relationship to do some negative things like engage in conflict. But if you can really think through what is it that you want them to do that they're not doing now and think strategically about ways you can make that happen, I bet you'll see some positive outcomes.
Yeah, okay. Our guest in this hour, folks, is Lori Kramer. She is Associate Dean of Academic Programs within the College of ACES. She's also Professor of Applied Family Studies at U of I here in Urbana-Champaign and has been doing research on this area. What is it that goes into making good sibling relationships? Has been doing that for a long time. And thank you very much for being here. We
appreciate
it.
Thank you so much.